Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
A lot of people are out of town this week. But we're not. We're fine. Ari, do you know everybody?
By face.
You have met. Good.
Yeah.
All right. So glad you're here. You did good?
Thank you.
First time.
There's always a first time.
There's always a first time. Well done. So, I apologize for having missed last week. I didn't mean to, but my body did some strange things and kept me at home. The world started turning around and around, and I couldn't go anywhere. So, thank goodness I'm not going around and around anymore. But I'm not sure how far you all got. And Wendy said that you started the next chapter as well as finished the
yes.
chapter that we were already working on.
Yes.
So, and that's turning a new leaf, right?
Yeah, I don't even think we finished one page of the next chapter.
Well, this is about everyday life. And it's basically about living the Dharma in everyday life, which is our subject, really, everybody's subject. How do we life in the Zendo, life in the Quaker meeting house is one thing, but how is it when we get up and walk outside and have to deal with driving and all the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that hit us in our everyday life. So that's the main subject. And he says we're always looking at our ordinary life through our ego, our own egotistic telescope, judging and evaluating, barking at each other and fighting and always trying to get something for ourselves. That sounds horrible. I don't
yeah.
think we're always doing that. I really don't. But that is our tendency because we're animals, and animals do try to protect themselves and feed themselves, and we have to do that too. And we're always learning how best to do it. He says, for the bodhisattva, there's another kind of life. To live the bodhisattva life is to live in vow as a cause, and the paramitas as a conditioned element. A vow as a cause that we put. It's very hard to speak about vow. It's putting it an intention directly into our life at every moment. Not a big ambition. In fact, it's a very humble and a small thing, but it's a vow just to do the best we can, not only for ourselves but for others. That's basically the bodhisattva vow. And the conditions are the paramitas, he says, which are the six bodhisattva practices, which is generosity, number one, because without generosity, you really can't be softened up to do any of the others. Once you're able to give something, even if it's a tiny bit, it changes the chemistry of your body and your mind so that you become much more soft and open to more than just yourself. And open then, after generosity, to the precepts themselves of how to keep some guidance in mind about how to do this thing. I rescued a little bug that was in a glass of water this morning, just floating around in there and waving its wings, but it couldn't get out. I thought, oh, no killing life, you know, what do we do with this little bug? So, it's not usually as dramatic as that in this, but that's part of it too. And then, patience and energy and meditation and wisdom. So those are the six bodhisattvas.
You said it's a cause. I was wondering, so here you have this vow of no killing, and if you didn't have that vow, you saw the bug, you might act one way. It almost seems like that vow then becomes something that actually shapes your life, because then you then act differently. Is that what he means by cause?
Yes. Yes. You're actually conditioning yourself in a new way, rather than just stomping on it. Whatever you see that's moving, you stop. And as he goes on, you pay attention. You actually notice what you're doing, and then decide what you're going to do. So he says, take the best care of one moment, offering yourself to your activity and letting your life touch the ground of existence. So it's just being where you are and doing what you're doing, rather than filling your life with floods and floods of input and excitement. It's a quiet life, he's describing. Turning over a new leaf is called awakening to awareness. If you totally accept your karma and get a taste of it, you can see your life turning in a new way. We should understand how ignorant we are, but we don't stay with it. We try to move toward the future to enhance and develop ourselves. That way, when you realize how ignorant you are, instead of trying to escape ignorance or staying with ignorance and enjoying it or feeling bad, you will naturally want to deepen yourself. To just use it, as Chogram Tsungpa said, just use whatever is operating in us, as just dig it into the garden soil and make it useful. He says, even though there's lots of karma interrupting your daily living, you can be free from your karmic life anytime, anywhere. From moment to moment, just return to the source of karma called emptiness. Emptiness means that the original nature of human existence is nothing but movement. And this is a big subject for Katagiri. He often talks about the dynamism of the universe, how dynamic and continually moving every single everything is. And that if we try to pin it down and stop it, it doesn't work, one, and it creates a lot of confusion for us. Emptiness means that the original nature of human existence is nothing but movement. And the content of emptiness is interdependent co-origination. the interdependence of everything on everything. So it's one big, infinitely large, and infinitely small at the same time, awesome dynamic. He says it's simply speaking called the rhythm of life. Causes and conditions are working together rhythmically like the seasons, he says. He says, when you picture your human consciousness with your dualistic consciousness, human existence with your dualistic consciousness, you believe there's a solid being. But it's like a coin turning on the bottom of a string. The functioning of energy leaves something behind, an impression that's left by the spinning coin, and you believe you see a ball. The ball is a provisional being that seems to be solid, but it's not. Karma's the same. Karma's nothing but movement, energy, constantly moving in all directions. Just the vitality of life, day by day, moment by moment, you are alive. So he says, we must, I would say we can, constantly live by taking the initiative to make our human existence come alive in emptiness. This is our practice. If we do this, repentance simultaneously helps us, and he says purifies us. I think this is extra. This is one way of sort of trying to clean up our life, but I'm not sure it's entirely accurate. In our practice, we don't call it repentance. We call it acknowledgement. Repentance means that we're sorry. That there's a kind of a hint of shame in it, and that is not what the acknowledgement is about. It's just accepting that things are the way they are, and that by itself frees us to continue, not be stuck somewhere. Certainly not stuck in shame. And purifying, I think, is raising a very high standard for us in a way that I think can be a mistake in practice. Trying to that's what Buddha was trying to do. He was trying to purify himself so much that he could finally be pure enough to connect with the heavens. And all he did was kill himself, or nearly kill himself. So I think the purification part of it is also, I disagree with Katagiri. Of course, it's up to you. It's everybody's. These are all ideas. These are all wiggles in our mind. So we need to be very, very discerning about what we know is true and what we're being told is true. There's a difference. So please only accept what resonates deeply as truth to you. He says, if you receive the rhythm of life in a passive way, it's called fate. He says, in Buddhism we say karma, but it's really fate. Fate is considered a doom or something wrong or bad, but it's not wrong. It's just the rhythm of universal life going on beyond good or bad, right or wrong. And if you can accept the rhythm of life in a passive way, it's called fate, because we feel helpless. We don't understand it. Oh, why did that car crash into my car? Really? It's just fate. It just happened. But he says you should just quietly accept the broad scale of your life, supported by past and present and future beyond your understanding. This is total acceptance of your life. You don't have to say, oh, why did this terrible thing happen to me? I must have done some bad thing before that made this happen to me. And it's all about me, 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 really. That kind of attitude. And nothing is about me. There isn't any me in that sense in the first place. The foundation of your life is a kind of rich soil. Whatever goes into the rich soil of your life, you have the great capability to adjust it and then act. That's dynamic, dynamism, the richness of your life. It's working constantly, so you can always do something, but dynamism must be backed by stillness. So in Buddhist teaching, stillness means emptiness, and it's also, he says, called aloneness. That when we sit, we begin to realize how very, very alone we are. He said, you're completely left alone in emptiness when you sit. It's a kind of clue to stand up in a new way. It's also an insight. To really accept how alone we are is a remarkable step in our thinking life, you could say. We were born alone. We're looking out of our eyes all by ourselves. Every step we take is all by ourselves. Unless you're lucky and you can lean on somebody, but even that is all by yourself. Your whole life is that way, and then when it's time to die, you die all by yourself. So it's a remarkable situation, really. And yet, here we all are together. Completely together. Completely depending on each other. So as I always say, if you look up alone in the dictionary, you find it means all one. It explains the whole thing, just with a word. And knowing that, accepting your aloneness, opens up huge possibilities of being together with everybody, because each one that you meet is also alone like you, and also like you, at one with you. It's the same thing. He says, when you feel this aloneness of human existence, compassion comes up. You feel your own complete aloneness, and then that aloneness extended to others. at that time you really want to do something for others, and that's called bodhisattva. So bodhisattva isn't some kind of charitable organization where you go out and do good things for everybody. It isn't that you lie down and become a doormat for everybody. It's just that you realize deeply just your own condition and the condition of everyone. And then, of course, you want to reach out. Reach out and touch, feed, help. So stand up in your life, he says, and accept the whole situation. That, I think, is excellent advice. Accept the whole of it, even though there's some lousy elements in it that we don't like. There's a lot of lousy elements in it, but we can accept it, and if we can change it, we'll change it. And if we can't, we just have to accept it. And in the acceptance, we learn so much. There's so much in it that we don't see until we completely take it in. I think, in a way, my experience of life is constantly learning in this way. Thinking I know, and then discovering how little I know, and how much I need to understand better. You can change your life because you accept many things in the broad scale of life, he says. Many things come to you, and you are not what you were. At that time, you turn over a new leaf. So that's the end of the chapter. Are there questions, comments? Jeffrey?
I want to thank you so much. And my practice with you, how I feel that I've really benefited by listening to the things that you shared with us regarding things that you've learned. Which in turn has helped open my heart and mind to that same realization. This morning I had the pleasure of reading a poem by Jane Hirschfield. You may be familiar with it. It's called My Proteins. And the reason why I bring it up is it absolutely supports what you just said. In her poem, and I can't recite the poem, but in the poem, she talks about how she has learned that, you know, something like 94% of all the cells in her body, how they're all little communities, and they're little colonies, and they're this and that. Some go north, some go south. It's the way she describes her body, like a highway, you know, all this stuff that's going on. She says, you know, is that me? You know, I mean, of course, she comes to this, it's me and it's not me. You know, it's a very kind of Zen moment in this poem. And I've been thinking so much about that kind of stuff that's occurred for me in my practice about, I know something. And then I learn about it in a little deeper way, and then I'm relearning it all over again.
Yes.
Much deeper way. I think of our bodies that way as we grow older, and these I get vertigo, I do this, I do that, you know, those kinds of things that happen along the way. You learn more about what this skin bag, as some Zen masters talk about it. And I'm so grateful for my practice that this is a this is what it's all about.
Mm.
It's the gratitude you feel for the practice. What we're not supposed to talk too much about the benefits, or you know.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind
there's
of
no attainment, Jeffrey.
Yes, no attainment, all that. And we're, you know, why do you do this? Well, you just, you know, just go, shut up, sit down, and practice. But there are things that when we get up, and as you say, when we walk out into that world, there are different ways to look at everything that's happening out there and how you're interacting with it.
Yes.
And how you see it.
Yes. How we find ways of accepting what's happening. All of it.
So that pivot point business, you know, moment to moment, and I can see the difference between an ordinary mind and bodhisattva mind. The six paramitas, or you're just shuffling down the street.
But the truth is, it's the same mind. Whether it's an ignorant mind or a bodhisattva mind. He is making a distinction here, and we make that distinction so we can understand what those paramitas are and have some guidance in our life. But the truth is, it's all Buddha mind. It's all just one. It can't be anything else. It doesn't come in little bits and pieces. Just one. But we also experience it as all separate and different, because there is this difference that we experience, that Jane Hirschfeld is experiencing. Her little highways are different from your little highways, and mine and Steve's. It's all different.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. That's why it's so amazing. It's just
8 billion highways.
Yes.
And
yes, I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just what we know. You know, as Ari and Violet will tell you, there's a whole lot more to know than that. It's just incredible.
And that's where I can jump on Katagiri's spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's talking about the universe.
Yes.
And you know, once again, humbling, and I agree wholeheartedly with this intellectual. He keeps going back to it. There's some things we can understand intellectually. A lot of these things you understand in some much deeper way, in a way that's is very mysterious.
You really need both. But we tend to emphasize the intellect because that's what our training is. And it's Zen training is sort of to emphasize the other side.
Yeah, where I benefit is really from that other side, because my training as an educator,
mm-hmm.
just say, you know, the cognitive sciences, this is how you do this, this is how you do that, it's all.
Yeah.
So much of it appears to me to be pretty superficial. As deeply as it goes, it's still kind of skating the surface. And I run into intellectuals all the time who come from that place.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes that and goes someplace that's so much more meaningful.
It's not explaining anymore. It's doing something else. Yeah.
Moving my heart.
Precisely. Yeah. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Well, thank you. You started out with me being so grateful that I get to come here and sit with this amazing group of people talking about these things.
Well, I feel the same.
Yeah, you know. Cafe Le Beau doesn't have any table at that I've yet encountered on Lincoln Avenue where I could have the same kind of conversation. So.
It's not quite the same, is it?
There's a book by Richard Buck. It's called Jonathan Livingston.
Oh, yes.
And I think everybody, it's a wonderful book. And we were reading the part of it with Ari today. It was a very kind of little quote. And it kind of resonated with what you were saying, where he's trying to just fly higher and higher and higher instead of seagulls. And then he meets the old master, the wise, you know, the wizard of the skies, and he asks him, he wants to. Both of the two sides together. If you're there, maybe sometimes you can't even draw the line in a sense, but easier said than done. But the whole time we were talking about it, thinking, it all comes together in a way.
It's what Buddha called the middle way.
The middle.
Thank you for the reference to Jonathan.
Yes, I haven't thought of that for years.
And we all read it
we did.
At a much younger age. And I think
60,
it's
70, 80, 90, 100, 48 years ago.
Yeah. Just to back up what you said, today on Facebook, I shared a site that had these wonderful insights from 21 children's literature books that every adult should know about. You know, because they were truly, you know, whether Seuss and E.B. White from Charlottesville, the Prince, and there was all this. And they had these wonderful quotations that big people could really benefit from. And as an elementary school teacher, I was very familiar with the works, and they inspired me working with children to have those books around.
Well, every parent benefits from those books. You know, you just get all that juicy stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just as good for a grown-up as they are for kids. E.B. White? Absolutely.
Charlotte's Web. I'll tell you, every time I read that book to my third graders, every year it got a little bit more powerful.
Yeah.
You know, there was some sort of accumulated quality to that book.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get through it without,
without crying.
When Charlotte says goodbye.
Yes. Yeah, it's very sad. Life is sad.
Do the books even exist anymore, separate from their film versions?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, go to Huckleberry's. Huckleberry's. The bookstore.
Yeah, I know, but do children still devour them? Without imagining how they saw it on the screen.
I hear your concern about how so many things have been treated.
Like The Wrinkle in Time, which is a brilliant book.
See the trailer, and I said, I read that book, but that is...
Oh, like Wrinkle in Time?
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. That's a fifth grade, everybody reads that fifth grade.
I see.
I read it as a grown-up. It's a wonderful book. Super. Well, it's 8 o'clock. So we'll have to drop our literary discussion and
announcements. Okay, we'll have to be dark next Tuesday because they're painting this room Monday. And
so we can't come back on Tuesday.
Yeah, we can come back on the 27th.
Is that 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Really?
We'll miss one Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll miss the 20th.
Okay, it's just one Tuesday. All right. Okay.
It looks like we have a Saturday in between.
Yes, I was thinking so.
We have a Saturday, a 7th.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day. We have a full day sit here.
So we'll miss the first day of spring, which is next Tuesday. But we'll be back the Tuesday after. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And I could use some help setting up Saturday, if anyone would be willing to be here early.
Oh, thank you, Violet.
And I can
Wait a minute, you're moving that day.
I'm not moving that day. We have a move on Thursday, but we have a few things also on because I am working on Saturday and Sunday, but I definitely will come. And I can help with the one. I'm definitely going to be here the first half of the day, hopefully also for the second. But anything from the morning to noon, I can commit to. The second half of the day, so even for the
So, to repeat, no next Tuesday.
Yeah.
No next Tuesday.
20th.
That's going to be weird.
Well,
what are we going to do?
We'll think of something.
We will think of something, won't we? Yeah.
So we have to clear everything out, so I hope you, that bench doesn't get Ross.
Is this ours?
No. I don't know which group owns it all. Maybe I'll ask again.
It could be for the Wednesday group.
Yeah.
We'll see. Well, we'll carry on Saturday. That's good. And come back on St. Patrick's Day. That's
17th.
Okay. You're wearing your green.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to remember. Well, you know.
He celebrates big time. So.
All the time. Ireland is in my blood. Okay, 1 minute, sit.